Progressive Radio News Hour with Stephen Ledman, Thursdays at 11 a.m. and weekends at 1 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Welcome to the Progressive Radio News Hour. I'm Steve Lenman. Bob Chapman is back. You know Bob. Bob, for decades, over 40 years, has written on business, finance, economics, politics. He currently is the editor and the owner of the International Forecaster. I marvel at it, how he manages to get so much information into the Forecaster twice every week. And a lot of what he talks about never comes out until sometimes months later. But Bob manages to find it out and inform his subscribers. It's a marvelous resource, and it's terrific to get Bob on this program regularly to update conditions on the economy. It's a new year, but it's the same old rotten economy, and it isn't getting better. And at some point, I mean, it's sort of levitating. Bob explains it better than I do. You know, you pump enough air into it, and you can keep it floating like a balloon until the balloon eventually gives out and pops, which is exactly what will happen with this economy at some point. But I, for one, can't predict when. I'm not certain anybody can predict when, except the market manipulators who can tell you when, because they just may decide at any moment that what went up will come down, and they will make it come down. Well, Bob knows all about that as well. Bob, it's always great having you back to update us. Let me just mention one more thing. Today I put out an article on my home state, Illinois, after yesterday, as far as I'm concerned, they did a dastardly thing. They raised the they raised the state income tax by two-thirds. Now, admittedly, Illinois has a fairly low state income tax. But whoever heard of doing that during hard times? The state has an enormous deficit problem. And what really struck me, Bob, most was, and I think this is happening all over the country, their unfunded pension liability, according to some good estimates, is $130 billion. I don't know how the hell they're going to repay that. I guess you would say they're not going to repay it.
No, they're not. We're going to have a confluence of problems after July the 1st, which is the end of the fiscal year for most states. And the problem is going to really manifest itself September, October, November. And it's not only the municipal or municipality problems, the non-market for municipal bonds, the inability to pay bills, hundreds of bankruptcies in towns, cities, counties, and states. And when this is happening, both the Fed and legislature have said that they're not going to lend any more money to the states, nor are they going to guarantee one-third of the interest in those Build America bonds anymore. So they're flat out of luck in the municipalities. At the same time, the federal government's got to raise $3.8 trillion, and they're not going to get any money out of Europe, and probably not from the Japanese or the Chinese either, because they're holding so many dollars now. The Chinese have $2.85 trillion in various currencies in forex surplus. And the amount in dollars is probably about $1.4 trillion. That's a guess. And so I think what the Fed is going to have to do is buy all the Treasury's paper. And that would also include the agencies, Fannie, Freddie, Ginnie, and FHA. Then on top of that, at the same time, during that time period, Europe is going to go upside down. I think both Ireland and Greece are going to default. Ireland could default in March after the election. And, you know, both those countries have been set by the same leadership. Papandreou, who runs Greece, is a member of the Bilderberger Group. The two attorneys involved with Anglo-Irish Bank, as well as the government in Ireland, both ex-attorney generals or attorney generals, they also are Bilderbergers. And so it's a giant sellout, and the Irish know it. The Greeks have a hard time handling it. And I think after the election in March, that I think the Irish are going to say, no, we're walking away. And that'll start it. But the real bad stuff's going to come in the fall, three-pronged, and it's going to be awful.
You're talking about some of the bigger countries, Bob. Admittedly, Ireland and Greece are very small countries. The way I look at them, they're the canaries in the coal mine. And the same disease affecting those countries affects the other pig countries, Spain, Italy. Do you think Portugal, do you think they may have serious trouble as well?
The next one to go down will be Portugal, followed by Belgium, which has no government. And as you've already seen, China has been buying bonds from both Portugal, Greece, and Spain already. And that may widen, but it's not going to solve the problem because Spain and their banks are bankrupt. They're owned by the same group that owns the Irish banks, which are the black nobility of Europe. They're called the Alpha Group. And what's going to happen is they're going to have a bailout for Spain. And when that happens, Italy will go. And, you know, they talked about and have put up $1 trillion. It's not enough. They're going to need over $3 trillion, which could bust the economies of Germany, Holland, France, and Austria. It's an impossible feat. The only way out is multilateral default to some extent, and a realignment of currencies. And if the dollar is going to remain the world reserve currency after that, then they're going to have to back their currency again with gold.
What's your guess, Bob, on whether the dollar will really come through this? You've been a dollar bear for a long time. Will the dollar, at least, say, in the intermediate term, remain the world's reserve currency? Because,
yes.
I mean, you got the euro weak, you got the pound weak, the yuan isn't ready for prime time yet, to say the least. I don't know about the Japanese yen, but Japan has got its own problems.
Well, that's correct. And the dollar will remain trading on the USDX index, which is six major currencies versus the dollar. And the Chinese yuan is not included in that. That will remain somewhere between 74 and 82. It's currently just about 80. And that'll be that way for at least 6 months because the amount of money that has to be raised in the first 6 months of the year in Europe for them is colossal. And that's why there's going to be no money coming out of Europe to buy treasuries. And the Fed knows that. And so the Fed has been in the market since May, which they didn't tell you about, and they're in there right now buying everything they can get their hands on so that bonds don't go down and interest rates don't go any higher. And they have a hard time dealing with the long end of the market, which are 10- and 30-year paper. And so they got their hands full. At the same time, they're trying to keep the market up, and at the same time, they're doing what they can to keep commodities from going into the stratosphere and to keep gold and silver from going higher. They intermittently come in two or three days in a row and then they back off. But they're not going to be able to hold them down. Too many people are fleeing to quality, and that quality is something tangible. Copper, wheat, corn, platinum, palladium, gold, silver, those are real things. And that's where the money's going to go. And anybody who's smart is in there buying gold and silver-related assets because it's the only safe place to be. It's safer than commodities.
Bob, one question on my mind, and I've seen a little bit of information on this. J.P. Morgan Chase, I guess the second biggest bank in America, is grossly overexposed in naked short positions on silver. So if an awful lot of silver buying, positive buying, occurs, what will happen to J.P. Morgan Chase?
I figure they'll probably lose about $10 billion. And there's over 30 class action lawsuits against them, one of which is a RICO suit by a professional. They get serious problems. And what they're going to have to do is pay everybody off, even though they're going to say that the government told us to do it, when in fact they're the largest shareholder in the Fed. And they're the ones who initiated the corner on silver in the first place. Of course, they'll be lying again, as they usually do. And HSBC will probably lose about $3 or $4 billion, maybe $5 billion. And there's other shorts as well. So there's a big floor into silver, and it's going higher. Gold, it's a flight to quality. Gold is now the real world reserve currency, not the dollar. And that'll show up later when the dollar or something, if it's going to be the world reserve currency, will have to be backed by gold. And the reason why is the Chinese, India, Russia, Iran, Brazil, Venezuela, they will not accept another currency that's not gold-backed.
That really says something, Bob. It shows, I think you're right, it shows that somewhere down the line, the currency winners are going to have to be backed by gold. And, I mean, just to be printing paper or issuing paper with nothing behind it, my goodness, I mean, the possibility that paper literally will be toilet paper. That ought to get a lot of people upset. I would think it would get Japan and China upset because they're both holding over $1 trillion worth of dollars, treasuries or whatever form they have it in.
Mm-hmm.
I guess mostly treasuries. I mean, I would be very concerned about that. China has a stronger economy, but I guess they have a bubble economy too. I saw some figures that said Obama's housing, China's housing bubble is a lot worse than America's at its worst point.
And that's true. That's
true. I mean,
true.
That means so big trouble ahead for China.
Everybody's got a problem. And there's no escaping it. It's as simple as that. And that's why people are going to gold. The Chinese government have been telling the people in China, and they get shops all over the place, buy silver and gold. Get rid of the dollars that you've got. Just get out of them. And that's what they've been doing. And the same in India. You know, I can remember back when the experts, who were always wrong, were saying the Indians will never buy gold over 600. There's a rush right now at 1400. The sales of gold in India just have gone bonkers. And there's no holidays coming up or anything like that. So it's an ongoing thing. It's going to be the only place to be.
Oh, I think it really is, Bob. I can remember going back at least a few years now when gold was going up, but nobody had any idea. This was before the crisis broke in fall 2007. I guess back then nobody had any idea, except you, of course, just how high gold might go. But I remember reading some analyst, and I forget who, I think a more honest one, who gold, I think, might have been, say, 300 an ounce, and making the statement that $400 gold is a no-brainer.
Yeah.
$400 gold.
Well, we're very few. You know, we have subscribers who have owned five or six stocks for 11 years, and every year they go up in value. I mean, they've made phenomenal amounts of money by just doing what I recommended and sitting on them. I mean, occasionally we'll make a trade, but not very often, because there's no reason to do so unless something new comes up and, you know, things change. But we only had that happen two or three times in 10 years. So we are not some stockbroker's dream.
Well, that's the Warren Buffett approach. I for sure am no Warren Buffett. One other thing on my mind, Bob, and I do want to get it into this program. You touched on it at the beginning of the hour. The problem, the solvency problem, or the potential bankruptcy problem in cities and towns. Legally, states cannot declare bankruptcy, as I understand it, but they certainly could go insolvent. And regardless of what the law is, if the debt burden gets so great that states simply can't pay it, well, law or no law, they won't pay it, which means they'll default. And whether they call it bankruptcy or whatever they call it, it really amounts to about the same thing. But you know that banking analyst, I guess one of the better ones, Meredith Whitney, predicts in the months ahead 50 to 100 cities and towns will default on their municipal obligations. I guess you go along with something like that.
Yeah, I did. In fact, I quoted her, and on Monday I was on in Tehran, Iran. They invited me to come on radio, television. It was the biggest newspaper in the country, and I gave them an interview. Hopefully, I'll have a link on it shortly. It wasn't a long one, but I talked about that, and I also voluntarily talked about the situation. They didn't ask me. Between the United States and Iran. I said, it's ridiculous. I mean, the country's done nothing wrong. They're just trying to start another war. And I'm sure that went over well in Iran, but I'll tell you, the State Department, which gets my publication and distributes it all over Washington, in all the embassies and consulates and everything, I don't think they were very happy with it. I said to them, why do you have me on this program? And he said, well, we've been following you for a long time, and you're one of the few people who tell the truth.
Well, that is for sure. And they've had me on a number of times as well, Bob, not on the economy, on different issues, often on Middle East issues, but they've also had me on at least two or three U.S. issues. Again, I would prefer leaving the economy to experts like you. My view, by the way, on whether there'll be a war with Iran is, I've been hearing the saber rattling for year after year after year, and the aircraft carriers and the whole fleets that deployed to the Gulf, and this just goes on, and Israel railing and Washington railing, and there's no war. And I honest to God believe, but of course I don't know, that the cool heads in the Pentagon at least know that a war with Iran would be pure insanity, and they don't want to go anywhere near it. They also know that the one they're waging in Afghanistan cannot be won, and what they really like to do is get the hell out of there somehow, but they don't quite know how to spin that, so it drags on and on. But compounding that catastrophe with going to war with Iran, I mean, that would have the potential of spinning out of control to World War III. I just can't imagine any cool head in any country wants anything like that, but you never know.
Well, as they say, desperate people do desperate things, and what's been pulled on the world economy by London and Washington and New York City has been horrible, and it's all been done to bring about world government and continue to widen the tremendous wealth of these people. And we're seeing all sorts of things going on. Just to cover them, you've got to get the international forecaster, because everything that you need to know every week is there. I mean, we got 40 pages on Wednesday, 40 on Saturday. We have a hard copy that goes out twice a month. Anything you need to know is there. And all you have to do is go to our site, theinternationalforecaster.com. Forecast is F-O-R-E-C-A-S-T-E-R. You get a free copy, or you can call 877 479-8178. That's toll-free, 877-479-8178. And you can get either kind of a copy. And also they have a special offering there for a free one-year subscription, which is terrific. And you should try to take advantage of it.
You know, Bob, you have so much insider information in it, and you publish it so early that I honest to goodness believe the insiders read it to keep up on what they may have missed.
Well, I think you're right. That's what they told me from the State Department. We have one person there who tells me everything. And he's the one that it gets the copies out to the consulates and the embassies. They used to call him Chargé d'Affaires, which was the head of the operation besides the ambassador or the professional employee that ran the place. But this thing's everywhere. I mean, when I publish, it's all over Washington within an hour.
Oh, I believe it. I believe it. And again, I mean, the people who make the policy, they may not know what the guy in the next room is doing, but you do. You do, and you publish it. So, again, I believe that the people in high places who, you know, I mean, they're right there crafting these policies, I absolutely believe that they read the forecaster to keep up on what they may have missed. And nobody knows everything, so you need to check and you need to review. And there it all is, voluminously, twice a week. I don't know how you do it. Somehow you do it, but and there it is, and it really is astounding to me.
Well, I love doing it, and we know how to do it. And I think the only real interference is the 30-hour schedule a week on radio. It kind of catches up with you, especially late programs, because I got to get sleep because I'm working 16, 18 hours a day. And so, but I want to reach people. I want people to know what's happening to them, who's doing it, and why they're doing it. And if they can understand that, maybe they'll be able to stop it.
Well, Bob, I feel exactly the same way. And even my feelings about the possibility of an expanded war that literally could go worldwide, the one thing in the back of my mind that I don't want to think about, but I can't help thinking about it, the fact that if economic conditions get so bad and there's so much pain in the country and public anger begins bubbling over, the all-time solution is distraction. You distract them. And what better way to distract people than by scaring them about another enemy and Johnny to the spot, your country is there protecting you from this enemy. So off we go, shock and awe, all the rest, another war, distracting people from their misery because of the deliberately inflicted on them destructive economic policy. What a way to run a country.
Well, and it's been run that way for a long, long time. We just never knew it. I mean, I never got hip to it until I went into counterintelligence. I said to myself, these guys are worse than the mafia.
Oh, the mafia are pikers compared to these guys.
Ah, they steal billions at a time. Sometimes even trillions.
Well, they don't have marine divisions. They may have hit squads, Bob, but they don't have marine divisions. They don't invade other countries. They send their hitmen to other countries, but they don't invade them, and they don't have F-16 planes. They don't have new. I don't think they have these. Maybe they do. I don't know. They haven't unleashed anything I'm aware of. But the mafia really are pushcots compared to the global predators and the main one that's headquartered in Washington.
Well, you know, that's what Lucky Luciano said when they let him out of jail in 43, because they needed the help of the mafia to inform the United States and Great Britain where the Germans were and what they were doing. And they did a brilliant job, quite frankly.
Exactly. I've never written about that, but I do know that went on. And he was the godfather back then. They put him away, and then they let him out because they needed him.
And he lived happily ever after. After the war was over, they exiled him to Italy, and that was the end of it.
That was a long time ago, back.
But he said, "I should have never chosen his profession." He says, politics of Wall Street with a place to be. You can see all you want.
Even back then, and a lot before him, Bob. I mean, you go back to J.P. Morgan. I mean, he was the arch thief before today's modern ones. But we didn't have a Fed. We did not have a Fed when he was around. He was the Fed. He was mm-hmm. the Federal Reserve before there was a Federal Reserve.
They legalized it.
They legalized it.
Horrible.
I have written about the way they legalized it. A day before Christmas, everybody was either out of town packing their bags. Nobody knew what the hell was going on. But the worst part of it was that if anybody read the Federal Reserve Act before they decided should I vote for or against, they wouldn't have understood it. Because the language was so deceptive, it really hid the meaning behind what these criminal bankers wanted to do. But they got it through, and it was passed in the middle of the night. Bad legislation gets introduced at the wrong time when people have no time to take a look at it. And to get it passed, they twist arms, they cut deals, and when necessary, they pass it in the middle of the night. And the Federal Reserve Act at the end of 1913 was passed in the middle of the night, right before Christmas.
And you know, I was telling people that over 50 years ago, and I was looking like I was really from another planet. And today, people are accepting it. So I'm sorry it took so long, but all we had was pamphlets. Today we got talk radio, we got the internet, totally different story. And we've accomplished more in the last 10 years than we did in the previous 40. But the point is, the people are learning, and in the end, we'll win and they'll lose. And they don't like to hear me say that, because if they lose, they're going on trial, and they know it.
Oh, exactly right, Bob. And, of course, the ones that are running things now don't worry about it. They just want to keep the game going longer, feeling that, you know, push will come to shove at some point. But I'll be gone, and somebody else will be in my place, and it'll be their problem, not my problem. And, by the way, back in 1913, talk about the inability to stay informed the way you can do it so easily today. There wasn't even radio back in those days, let alone television, let alone the Internet. There were print publications. But it's amazing. I mean, information can get around. People just have to make an effort. They had to make a greater effort then than the ease with which information is accessible today, which is why, Bob, all the time, I absolutely boil over inside that people, so many, have access, computer access, online access, and they don't take advantage of it to understand what the hell is going on, how their government is hurting them, not helping them. And it doesn't matter whether it's Bush, whether it's Obama, whether it's the man on the moon. It's the system that runs things. These people are just stooges. They're props that are put in place to serve their time, pass on. Another prop comes in. They can make Mickey Mouse. They can make an electronic image of the president. It makes no difference. The power, the unseen power behind the power, runs things, and just call it the system.
Well, that's why we're on Progressive Radio, and that's why we're killing the left-right paradigm. We're all Americans. We want to win. We want a happy life. We don't want this stuff going on. And if we all get together, we can do it.
We sure can, Bob. And as imperfect as things were when you and I grow up, my goodness gracious, I yearn for going back to those days. And believe me, I remember, I didn't pay attention when I was much, much younger, but I did later on. And looking back when I grew up in the 40s and 50s after the war, I remember the war. You do too, Bob. We remember it, but I was too young to really understand what the hell was going on. But I remember the post-war, and I remember the 50s, and I finished college in 1956. And it seemed like a very placid time back then. Well, compared to today, it was. And yet, if you take a good look at it and dissect it, it had lots of warts that were very ugly. They're just a lot bigger and a lot more of them today.
Well, you're right. And I think we're going to go back to living like we did in the 40s and 50s. And that'll be the best we can do.
Oh, I hope so, Bob. Oh, we are out of time. The time goes by so fast. I'll shoot you an email, and I look forward to the next round when next month when you come back.
And I am too. And
thanks,
thank you,
Bob.
All for listening.
And join us this weekend, of course, 1 p.m. Eastern Time, two more important programs. Join us all the time, three times a week.